This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. In 2008, journalist Emilio Gutierrez Soto and his 14-year-old son Oscar came to the U.S.-Mexican border seeking asylum. Gutierrez Soto was a newspaper reporter who wrote about the Mexican military's behavior during a drug cartel crackdown. The Mexican military threatened his life because of his reporting. The Gutierrez lived in the United States, operating a food truck, staying out of trouble, attending the mandatory check-ins with immigration officials. And then shortly after the Trump administration took over the reins of government, the Gutierrezes ended up on a list of people to be targeted for arrest. They spent 7 months in detention. No one's really sure why. The only thing that has been suggested is that Emilio Gutierrez Soto has voiced criticism of U.S. immigration policy, and he could face deportation soon. Joining me now are Emilio Gutierrez Soto. Thanks for coming in.
Gracias, muy amable.
And Luis Trelles will be assisting us in translating. Thanks very much.
Oh, of course, my pleasure.
And also here is Lynette Clementson, who is the director of the Knight Wallace Fellowships for Journalists at the University of Michigan. Mr. Gutierrez has been awarded a fellowship for this year there.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start with the backstory. In what way did the Mexican military threaten you?
Bueno, si me permite hacer un poco de historia. Escribí algunos artículos, algunas notas informativas.
He started writing some articles on instances of corruption in the military in the northwest of the country where he worked.
Específicamente hablé de un caso en donde los militares allanaron un hotel.
Emilio is telling us that it all came to a head when he wrote about a case where the military took over a hotel where migrants who were on their way to the U.S. were staying and basically robbed them. And that took the attention of the general in charge of the army in the town.
There's an important point to make here, and that is that he had the byline. His name was on the story for the first story, but in subsequent stories, it was not. And I'm asking, why is that important?
Bueno, la violencia en México se empezó a generalizar con la llegada de Felipe Calderón a la presidencia de la República. Y empezaron a darse las
So, starting with the administration of President Felipe Calderón in the mid-2000s, the murder rate, homicide rate shot up in terms of drug cartel violence. That's when human rights activists, civil rights activists, and journalists started getting killed. So many, many, many newspapers in Mexico made the decision to run some of the more difficult stories signaling acts of corruption or the drug cartels and run them without bylines for the security of their journalists.
Somewhere along in his coverage, he got a visit from the Mexican military. Could you tell us about that?
Sí. Fue en el mes de mayo del 2008. Poco después de la medianoche, escuché uno. Pensé que había explotado un transformador de
Yes, it was in May 2008. Emilio thought that there had been an explosion in a local electrical unit in the neighborhood. It was actually the military breaking down the door, looking for him and his son.
And what did they tell you?
Bueno, me obligaron a tirarme al suelo en ropas interiores. Posteriormente me obligaron a levantarme, me dijeron que andaban buscando armas y drogas.
They made me drop to the floor, I was in my underwear, then they made me get up and they searched and destroyed my house looking for drugs and weapons, and obviously they didn't find anything.
So this was just a shot across the bow, a warning.
Esta fue prácticamente la última amenaza.
So this was actually the last warning. After not finding anything in my home in terms of drugs or arms, I knew that it could be a lot more difficult later on. And a lieutenant was the only one of the military crew that came into my house, the only one that didn't have a mask on, told me that I had to start denouncing the drug cartels instead and that I should behave better.
You decided that you needed to seek asylum in the U.S. Why was that the best option for you?
No tuve la oportunidad de llegar hasta Ciudad Juárez, de Ascensión, Chihuahua, que dista aproximadamente unos...
My first option was to try to get to the Belgium's embassy in Ciudad Juárez, but that was more than 100 kilometers away from the town of Ascension, where I'm from, and there were three military checkpoints on the road to Ciudad Juarez. That's when I decided to take a rural road, less than 60 kilometers, to get to the border with the United States. It was the kind of thing where I flipped the coin, and that's how it came out.
Now, an immigration judge in Texas is ruling that you should not receive asylum. You should be deported. And according to the reports I've read, the judge doesn't think you were a journalist. Why is there confusion about that?
Yo realmente no entiendo por qué está cuestionando mi función como comunicador, como periodista, como reportero. Todas las pruebas se le han presentado.
I can't understand it. We have put cartloads of evidence before this judge full of my articles. He has not read them. He has asked us to synthesize them and you know, make it into just a more manageable package. We have done that. He still hasn't read them. He has asked us for another selection. And at some point, I think this legal process has become a personal thing for this judge. It's... And what I'm looking for is the justice that I wasn't able to find in Mexico.
I've seen national publications that have done articles on you as far back as 2009, and there have been a lot of articles about your journalism since then. Several prominent journalism groups have rallied around your case, and an appeal judge was very skeptical about the immigration, the reasoning of the immigration judge in Texas. What do you think is really going on?
Reitero, el asunto legal se transformó en personal, pero yo siento que nosotros...
So I just want to say that, yes, at some point this legal process turned personal, and that I was among the first to apply for asylum once the violence in Mexico started to grow during President Felipe Calderón's administration in the mid-2000s. Since then, asylum claims have jumped into the thousands, especially in Texas. And I do believe that the judges have to work a lot. Immigration judges have to work a lot more. And maybe this judge is looking at a caseload that is a lot bigger than it used to be before, and yeah, we're making him work.
Next week, proof of your career as a journalist is due to the immigration judge in Texas. Several students and professors came together to translate hundreds of your articles into English. What do you think of that effort?
Oh, es un esfuerzo que yo aprecio mucho. Tengo un infinito agradecimiento. Me han demostrado que las políticas y la cultura en Estados Unidos no radica en el actuar que se está dando.
I am eternally grateful for the effort. It's hard for me to think of how I can reciprocate all the effort and the help and the, you know, of right-minded people that have showed me that there are many more good people in the U.S. society than what the official policy seems to indicate sometimes.
I have to ask you about the byline again. How much does that complicate your case when the most important articles don't actually have your name signed to them?
Yo no lo veo como algo difícil tomando en cuenta un asunto de lógica.
So I don't see it as such a difficult issue when you put it in context. I was the only journalist in this northwestern region of Mexico working on this beat, following these kinds of stories. And you also have to remember that this can be a very dangerous profession in Mexico, as I believe there might be some 130 journalists that have been killed in the last 10 years, and it was a security issue in my newspaper.
Lynette Clementson, let's turn to you for a second. Why have you and others at the University of Michigan gotten involved in this immigration case?
At the Knight Wallace Fellowships for Journalists, of course, we're journalists. We're not activists, though there have been several activists and advocates who have gotten involved in this case. For us, I think it was a very simple call that the one thing we can advocate for is freedom of the press and safety and freedom for journalists in the United States and around the world. And this case was a clear one that we felt was deserving of the attention that we could bring to it and the support and credibility that the University of Michigan could lend to the arguments being pulled together. The National Press Club in Washington, D.C. has been a leader in efforts around Emilio's case. Emilio won their highest award, which may have been the start of his problems with ICE this time around, because in receiving that award in October of 2017, in his acceptance speech, he was critical of the current administration's immigration policies. That was in October of 2017. And in December of 2017, after being in the United States for 10 years, after never missing a scheduled check-in, after never running afoul of the law, he went for a regular check-in and was detained and kept in detention for nearly 8 months. And so for people who are concerned with freedom of the press, the relationship between Emilio speaking out against what he felt was an unjust immigration policy and his sudden detention with no previous activity to suggest that he was a threat in the United States seemed to rise to a level that demanded that American journalists who speak out and stand up for press freedom become involved in this case.
Why did you offer Mr. Gutierrez a Knight Wallace Fellowship, which is a prestigious position?
So our fellowship program is one of the most prestigious in the country for journalists. And in selecting fellows for the program, we look carefully not just at a person's past accomplishments, but at what they hope to do in the future for journalism. And while Emilio's past story was compelling, I could not have offered him a fellowship had I not taken a hard look at what his desires were in terms of his work and career for the future. And I went to El Paso and met Emilio and his son Oscar in the detention center and basically had an interview. I interview everyone who's a finalist for the fellowship. And the difference in this case was that I had to get permission from DHS and interview Emilio in a room with two-way glass with guards watching us. But we did an interview. And as part of that, I was looking for his intentions around his career in journalism. Did he think he had more to say? Were there things he still wanted to learn and do? If he had his choice, would he be working as a journalist? And I came away from that conversation.
Let me ask you, because when he was detained, as far as ICE was concerned, he was a food truck operator.
Correct.
How does this all play in the question about whether he should be deported?
I think it's highly relevant. It's another thing that we hope that the judge in this case will take into consideration, that while their case was in pending status, Emilio had to make a living and so worked as a food truck operator. That is different than that being his profession, his chosen profession. And his desire has always been to work as a journalist. And he would welcome the opportunity to return to a career in journalism in the United States. And in the United States, there's actually a need in this country for a journalist like Emilio. And what he could bring to reporting around border issues and to transforming communities in large swaths of the country is significant. And so for me, while I'm weighing future potential of the people who come through the program, I think that there's a strong argument to make that Emilio would make very meaningful contributions to journalism if allowed to stay here in the United States. And so for that alone, he was a strong candidate to be a Knight Wallace Fellow.
You mentioned National Press Club, but there have been several prominent journalism groups who have
many
gotten involved in this, and still the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency and this immigration judge are really not paying attention. What do you think that says about the concerns of journalists in this country?
Well, I think this particular case raises concerns for press freedom internationally and at home. And the number of organizations that have signed on in this case, specific to the details of this particular case. Of course, the broader issue of asylum, there are many entry points for expressing concern about the way the policy is currently being handled. But in this particular case, as it relates to press freedom, I think that there are reasons to believe that a decision in this case, also says something about the standing of the press in this country. And if for no other reason than that, I think American journalists need to be paying attention to this case, need to be aware of the details of this case, and need to think about the possible implications if Emilio is sent back to what many believe would be an almost certain death sentence for speaking out against current policy.
Mr. Gutierrez, there's another hearing before this immigration judge in Texas to determine whether you and your son are deported. If you are deported, what are your options? What will you do?
Yo espero que no nos deporten. Las evidencias son fuertes, los argumentos son reales, la necesidad de vida es auténtica.
I hope I won't be deported. The evidence is strong. The arguments are well thought out, and the fear for my life is real. So I hope the judge will get to see this and reach a new understanding.
La opción es vivir en los Estados Unidos. Si el juez llega a determinar que somos nuevamente deportables, vamos a luchar.
Our hope is to stay. If the judge decides for deportation, then we will appeal and we will try to keep appealing. It's been a long, arduous process, but we just don't have an option to turn back.
Emilio Gutierrez Soto is a journalist from Mexico who, along with his son, have been seeking asylum in the U.S. for a decade. Lynette Clementson is the Charles R. Eisendrath Director of the Wallace House at the University of Michigan. The Wallace House is the home of the Knight Wallace Fellowships for Journalists. And my thanks to Luis Treyes for translating. He's a producer-reporter with Radio Ambulante and a Knight Wallace Fellow. Thank you all very much. Gracias.
Gracias. Muy amable.
Thank you.